The Katra Podcast, conversations for the curious, essential knowledge, simplified. Your gateway to essential ideas that matter most. This audio summary has been prepared with the help of a Katra AI. Welcome back to the deep dive. Today, we're tackling a presidency that, well, it didn't just mark 8 years on the calendar, it fundamentally shifted America's course. We're diving into Gilchoy's analysis, the Reagan Revolution.
Exactly. And our mission here, for you listening, is really to get past the simple hero or villain labels you often hear. Mm. We want to look at how the actual mechanics of the political, economic, and cultural changes that Reagan set in motion, that conservative framework he built.
And it's so relevant today, isn't it? I mean, think about the political division we see now, the debates over inequality, the national debt. Mm. So much of that conversation really has its roots back in the 80s. Understanding how Reagan kind of dismantled that old New Deal way of thinking is, well, it's essential for making sense of where we are now.
Definitely. And our guide for this is Gilchoy. He's a really respected presidential historian, professor of history up at McGill University, got his PhD from Harvard. His work is known for being, you know, pretty balanced.
Okay, McGill. So he's looking at this from Canada. Does that give him a different perspective? Maybe a bit of distance from all the partisan fighting you usually get when talking about Reagan in the U.S.?
I think it absolutely does.
Yeah.
That distance, being outside the Washington bubble, lets him step back and offer a more, let's say, nuanced take.
Yeah.
It's less about taking sides and more about analyzing objectively. You know, how did Reagan's personality, his way of communicating, his actual political ideas, how did all that interact?
Right. Less heat, more light. So that perspective lets him argue this central idea, what makes the Reagan years a revolution, not just, you know, another presidency.
Yeah. The core argument is pretty clear. Troy sees Reagan as orchestrating this fundamental shift, a real realignment of American conservatism. He didn't just follow Carter. He actively took apart that liberal consensus that had dominated since FDR, really. And he replaced it with a framework that stressed limited government, free markets, a strong military. And that framework has largely stuck around.
So more than just winning elections, he actually changed the whole ideological playing field. And the book says it wasn't just policy pushed through, it was this blend. Sophisticated ideas from conservative thinkers mixed with really accessible, optimistic messaging.
That's the key insight, I think.
Yeah.
He managed to translate some pretty complex stuff like supply-side economics or assertive foreign policy into messages that resonated with people. Messages about American exceptionalism, about renewal, mourning in America. That blend was crucial for pulling together this very diverse coalition he needed.
Okay. And the book lays it all out chronologically, starting from, what, the Goldwater campaign failures, through the tough times of the 70s, and then into Reagan's actual policies, economics, culture, foreign policy.
Exactly. It traces that whole arc.
Okay, so to really get why Reagan's message landed so hard, we need to rewind to late 70s. Troy paints this picture of the age of malaise. Sounds pretty bleak.
It really was a deep crisis of confidence.
Mm.
Economically, you had stagflation, that awful combination of prices going up and unemployment being high. People remember the gas lines, right?
Oh, yeah.
Symbolizing America seeming vulnerable. And then the Iran hostage crisis. It just felt like American power was fading. A real sense the country was sort of adrift.
And Reagan steps into that. You mentioned his background, Hollywood. That wasn't just a side note, was it? Troy argues it was key training.
Absolutely essential. It taught him performance, yes, but also the power of narrative, how to connect emotionally with millions of people through a screen. And then his time as governor of California, that was like a test lab. He tried out ideas on welfare reform, managing budgets. So he wasn't coming out of nowhere. He was practiced. A tested communicator, a tested executive.
Right, ready for the moment.
And that readiness was crucial for the first big move. Reaganomics, the book breaks it down into three main pillars. You've got the huge tax cuts in 81.
The Economic Recovery Tax Act, yeah.
Right. Then significant deregulation across various industries. And third, deep cuts to federal spending, particularly on social programs, while boosting military spending.
The theory, of course, was the supply side idea cut taxes, especially for corporations and the wealthy, and that frees up capital, boosts investment, creates jobs, the whole trickle down concept. But that was controversial even then, wasn't it? Critics were immediately saying, wait, tax cuts plus more military spending equals ballooning debt.
Oh, absolutely. And Troy doesn't shy away from that. He gives you the balanced view. On the plus side, stagflation was broken, though the Fed played a big role there, too. And the economy did see sustained growth in the mid 80s.
Okay.
The costs, undeniable. The national debt basically tripled. And the economic changes definitely widened the gap between the rich and poor. That's a legacy we're still wrestling with. So, yeah, high returns, but also really high costs.
and selling this complex, contested economic plan required?
Yeah.
Well, this brings us to the great communicator aspect. He used simple stories, powerful images, almost bypassing the traditional media.
He really did. He knew how to craft a narrative.
Yeah.
And sometimes the simplest things were the most powerful. Like that killer question in the 1980 debate, are you better off than you were 4 years ago?
Devastatingly effective.
Totally. It just cut through everything. All the complex policy talk just vanished, and it became about your personal experience, your wallet. It's still the playbook for challenging an incumbent today, isn't it?
It really is. And that simplicity, that directness, helped him pull off this amazing feat of coalition building. He brought together groups that didn't always see eye to eye.
Right, yeah, the economic libertarians, they wanted the tax cuts and deregulation. You had the Christian right, really energized around social issues like abortion. And then you had the Reagan Democrats, working class voters who felt the Democratic Party had left them behind.
Holding that group together seems tricky. He must have been speaking different languages to different parts of that coalition.
He was incredibly skilled at it. And you have to include the neoconservatives in that mix, too. Intellectuals, often former Democrats, who were really focused on a strong defense and promoting democracy abroad. He managed to find common ground, or at least strategically downplay the differences, to keep them all focused on shared enemies, like big government or the Soviet Union.
Okay, so you mentioned the Christian right. We focus a lot on the economics and foreign policy, but how did he keep them happy? They wanted more of a cultural shift, right?
That's a really important point the book covers. For the cultural conservatives, a lot of it was about the rhetoric, the symbolic gestures, but the most lasting impact, judicial appointments.
Ah, the courts.
Exactly. He appointed judges, especially to federal courts and eventually the Supreme Court, who championed judicial restraint and held more conservative views on issues like abortion.
Mm-hmm.
That shifted the legal landscape for decades. It was a quieter part of the revolution, maybe, but incredibly significant.
Let's pivot to foreign policy then, because that seemed to have, well, a couple of distinct phases, started very hardline.
Oh, yeah. Initially, it was full rejection of detente, the easing of tensions with the Soviets, massive military buildup, calling the USSR the evil empire, the whole peace through strength mantra, very confrontational.
But then things changed. He started talking to Gorbachev.
And this is where Troy highlights Reagan's, maybe surprising, pragmatism. Once the U.S. position of strength felt established, Reagan was willing to engage, really engage, with Gorbachev, the new Soviet leader who was himself pushing for reforms.
So it wasn't a flip-flop, but a sequence. Strength first, then talk.
That's how Troy presents it.
Yeah.
And the result was pretty historic. The 1987 Intermediate Range Nuclear Forces Treaty, the INF Treaty, first time ever an entire class of nuclear weapons was eliminated, achieved through that mix. Military pressure and genuine person-to-person diplomacy.
Okay, so looking back at the whole era through Troy's lens, what are the big takeaways, the core themes?
Well, theme number one, I'd say, is the sheer impact of principled optimism.
Yeah, I agree with that. Reagan didn't just sell conservatism as, like, holding the line. He framed it as forward-looking, mourning in America. That feeling of confidence itself was revolutionary, especially after the pessimism of the 70s. It shows politics isn't just policies, it's the mood, the story you tell.
And theme two is kind of the flip side of that conviction. Ideological conviction tempered by political pragmatism. He had core beliefs he wouldn't budge on, but he's willing to compromise on the details to get things done. He even signed some tax increases later on when the deficits became too big to ignore politically.
That's a really interesting point. That flexibility, knowing when to bend on tactics while staying firm on the big picture, that's probably how major change actually happens in a democracy, isn't it? You can't be completely rigid.
Exactly. And the third theme flows from that, the institutionalization of the revolution. Reagan didn't just win elections. He fundamentally shifted the center ground of American politics. The terms of the debate changed.
And the proof is that later presidents, even Democrats like Bill Clinton, ended up adopting some of his core ideas, right? Like welfare reform or deregulation.
Precisely. When your opponents start incorporating parts of your agenda, you know you've made a lasting impact. It's become the new baseline.
Part of Reagan's success was his knack for boiling down these big ideas into really memorable lines, wasn't it?
No, he was the master of the political soundbite, but one that actually carried philosophical weight. Where do you want to start?
Yeah.
The big one about government.
Has to be from his first inaugural address, 1981. Government is not the solution to our problem. Government is the problem. Bam. Just like that, he encapsulated his whole domestic philosophy and set the tone for the next decade, maybe longer.
Changed the whole conversation. Okay, how about the one summing up his approach to the Soviets? that mix of toughness and willingness to deal.
That would be trust but verify. It was actually an old Russian proverb he used brilliantly. It showed he wasn't naive, but he was willing to negotiate if there were checks in place. Pragmatism again.
Mm-hmm. And my personal favorite, maybe because it uses humor to nail that public frustration with red tape.
Gotta be. The 9 most terrifying words in the English language are, I'm from the government and I'm here to help.
Right. It made his anti-government stance feel less like dry ideology and more like common sense, something everyone can kind of chuckle along with.
Yeah.
A joke is a political tool.
So clever. Okay. Beyond just understanding history, how can we, you know, apply insights from the Reagan era today? Troy offers some practical takeaways.
Yeah, he does. And they're relevant way beyond politics.
Yeah.
Application 1 is about leadership and narrative. Any leader in business, community work, whatever, can learn from how Reagan used simple, consistent stories, personal anecdotes, visuals, connecting emotionally. Sometimes the story is more powerful than just dumping data on people.
Makes sense. Tell a compelling story. What else?
Application 2, negotiation strategy. Look at the Reagan-Gorbachev dynamic. Establish your strength. Be clear about your position. Then be open to building rapport and finding breakthroughs when the moment is right. It's about being strong and flexible, not just one or the other. Shifting from confrontation to cooperation smartly.
Right, knowing when to push and when to partner. And
organizational management.
Right.
Think about the Reagan White House. You had ideologues pushing for purity, like David Stockman at OMB early on, and pragmatists like James Baker trying to actually get deals done. Managing that tension, keeping everyone moving forward, that's a challenge in any large organization, isn't it? Balancing the visionaries with the implementers?
Absolutely. Keeping the big goals in sight while dealing with the messy realities. Okay, as we wrap up, final thoughts. What's the big thing you take away from this deep dive into Troy's analysis?
For me, it really underscores the need for a nuanced view of his legacy. It's just not simple. Yes, there was renewed confidence, economic growth, but it came alongside exploding debt and deepening cultural divisions. Those complexities, those trade-offs, they didn't end in 1989. They're still shaping our debates right now. We live in the house Reagan built, in many ways, with all its strengths and weaknesses.
Yeah, that's well put. And what stood out to me, maybe surprisingly, was just how central that Hollywood background was. It wasn't just trivia. Troy makes a strong case that it was the core training for Reagan's political success, mastering mass communication, building that almost personal bond with millions of voters. That trust allowed him to push for changes that might have seemed impossible otherwise. See you next time with another remarkable thinker, another powerful book, and another idea that has shaped our world. This audio summary is brought to you by Acatra Foundation.